The entire ride would take 11 minutes. That was what the boy had promised us. The boy who never showed. To be honest, I hadn't expected to find the chairlift. Not through the maze of old-growth firs, and not in the dwindling light. Not without our escort. A minute earlier, I'd been on the brink of suggesting that we give up and hike back to the logging road. But at the peak of our despondency, we saw it. The lift, rising like a mirage out of the timber woods, its four dark cables striping the red sunset. Chairs were floating up the mountainside, 40 feet above our heads. Empty chairs, upholstered in ice, swaying lightly in the wind. Sailing beside them, just as swiftly and serenely, 100 chairs came down the mountain. As if a mirror were malfunctioning, each chair separating from a buckle-bright double. Nobody was manning the loading station. If we wanted to take the lift, we'd have to do it alone. I squeezed Clara's hand. A party awaited us at the peak. Or so we'd been told by Mr. No-Show, Mr. Nowhere, a French boy named Eugene de la Rochefoucauld.
I bet his real name is Bert,
Clara said angrily. We had never been stood up before.
I bet he's actually from Tennessee.
Well, he had certainly seemed European when we met him coming down the mountain road on horseback 1 week ago this night. He'd had that hat. Such a convincingly stupid goatee. He'd pronounced his name as if he were coughing up a jewel. Eugene de la Rochefoucauld had proffered a nasally invitation. Would we be his guests next Saturday night at the gala opening of the Evergreen Lodge? We'd ride the new chairlift with him to the top of the mountain and be among the first visitors to the marvelous new ski resort. The president himself might be in attendance. Clara, unintimidated, had flirted back.
2 dates. Is that not being a little greedy, Eugene?
No less would be acceptable, he'd said, smiling. For a man of my stature.
Eugene was 5'4". We'd assumed he meant education, wealth. The party was to be held 7,000 feet above Lucerne, Oregon, the mountain town where we had marooned ourselves at 19 and 22. Still pretty, Clara was beautiful, still young enough to attract notice, but penniless, living week to week in a historic boarding house. Historic had turned out to be the landlady's synonym for haunted. Turn-of-the-century sash windows, we'd discovered, meant pneumonia holes. We'd waited for Eugene for close to an hour, while time went slinking around the forest, slyly rearranging its shadows. Now a red glow clung to the huge branches of the Douglas firs. When I finally spoke, the bony snap in my voice startled us both.
We don't need him, Clara.
We don't?
No, we can get there on our own.
Clara turned to me with blue lips and flakes daggering her lashes. I felt a pang. I could see both that she was afraid of my proposal and that she could be persuaded. This is a terrible knowledge to possess about a friend. Nervously, I counted my silver and gold bracelets, meeting out reasons for making the journey. If we did not make the trip, I would have to pawn them. I argued that it was riskier not to take this risk. For me, at least. Clara had her wealthy parents waiting back in Florida. As much as we dared together, we never risked our friendship by bringing up that gulf. I touched the fake red flower pinned to my black bun. What had we gone to all this effort for? We owed our landlady $12 for January's rent. Did Clara prefer to wait in the drifts for our prince, that fake frog, Eugene, to arrive? For months, all anybody in Lucerne had been able to talk about was this lodge, the centerpiece of a new ski resort on Mount Joy. Another New Deal miracle. In his fireside chats, Roosevelt had promised us that these construction projects would lift us out of the Depression. Sometimes I caught myself squinting hungrily at the peak, as if the government money might be visible, falling from the actual clouds.